Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
House Homeland Security Committee Ranking Member Benny Thompson.
Despite being the new kid on the block, according to the recent GAO report, things are moving along. One of the positive aspects of putting the department together and over $300 billion in resources in it is that we've not had a successful incident on the homeland since 9/11.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Sign up for Federal News Radio's email alerts to stay on top of the latest news affecting the federal community. Go to federalnewsradio.com and click the sign up button at the top of the page.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our No Holds Barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Mark Forman, former CIO of the government. And Mark, what are you doing now?
Recently started a new company called Government Transaction Services with another person who's been involved in government reform for a long time. Government Transaction Services is a cloud-based IT services company. So while we're using cloud technology, we're really selling the use of that technology as a service, and we're focusing first on grants filing, so post-award grants administration, the interplay between universities that receive these grants and how they do their filing with the federal government.
Cool. Website?
Government Transaction Services is right now available at a website URL associated with our first product, EZ, that's letter E, letter Z, grantfiling.com.
That explains your email address now. Okay, I understand. I thought maybe you were going to start negotiating schedules or something.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, we've as founders of the company, we've adopted very simple emails. mark@easygrantfiling.com is
there
my
you go.
Email.
We are going to get back to this because talking before we went on air, you got some very cool applications here. But what I want to do right now is talk about your former position and talk a little bit about the government industry communications issues that have come to the fore of late. So let's start with your background. Give us your 4 or 5 minute history here.
Okay. I went to undergraduate at Ohio State, the Ohio State University, for all the Buckeyes out there. in fact, met my wife there, so we're both Ohio State alumni. I went to University of Chicago to the what's now called the Harris School of Public Policy Studies, and so my background is heavily economics and operations research applied in government, and I'm very big on government management reform. Started my career doing some summer internships in Washington and just loved it here. Came back as what was then called the Presidential Management Intern Program, I think they're called.
Oh, yeah.
Presidential Management Fellows.
Did you get the little book?
I did, and yeah. Had a great career plan via that program, and a very, very strong supporter of that. I started my official federal career at GAO, at the Government Accountability Office in the Defense Division.
I won't hold that against you.
It's a great organization, and was there for about 2.5 years, went to a company called TASC, which was part of Northrop Grumman, now back on its own, where I did applied operations research, built up three little practices, looking at technology investments, logistics, and applied operations research management science. Went to a small startup called Defense Group Incorporated that was founded by Jim Wade, the last undersecretary for research and engineering, and then the Cold War ended.
There you go.
And a guy named Senator Roth, late Senator Roth, was the ranking member on Senate Governmental Affairs that time. He was looking for somebody that understood performance-based management concepts. In fact, he hired several of us, including my partner, John Marshall. I'd done a lot of work looking at the defense budget and short-term, midterm, and long-term implications on performance relative to alternative weapons investments and R&D investments. So I understood both performance-based management concepts and defense, and that's exactly what he's looking for. So I was lucky to get a senior staffer role on Senate Governmental Affairs Committee and co with Joint Economic Committee. That's the way things are done in the Congress. And
who were the chairs back then, or the co-chair?
Well, it was John Glenn, Senator Glenn from Ohio, my home state.
There you go.
And I was working with Tom Sisti, Dave Ploker, a number of folks over there. It was a terrific bipartisan time for government management reform, first during the Bush administration, Bush 41, and then during the Clinton administration. And we had a terrific team on Roth's staff led by Frank Polk as staff director on Senate Governmental Affairs, John Duncan in Roth's staff, who are two terrific people for understanding management reform and understanding how to get bipartisan agreement in the Congress. It's
much easier then than now.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I've learned on the government reform arena. It's got to be bipartisan, and it's got to involve both the Congress and the executive branch.
It ain't easy.
It's not. But we were quite successful working with Paul Brubaker, Bill Greenwald, Peter Levine, Dave Ploker, Tom Sisti, and overhauling the procurement laws, the IT acquisition laws, a number of program management laws, and the Federal Acquisition Streamline Act, Federal Acquisition Reform Act.
Was Paul working for Bill Cohen back then?
Right.
Okay.
So I was at the full committee. Paul was the staff director on this on the subcommittee, first minority, and then, of course, in 94 and 96, we flipped and were in the majority for my time there. 97, Fred Thompson took over the committee and wanted to focus on campaign finance reform, replaced us management consulting types with lawyers that understood campaign finance investigations.
Well, I thought he replaced you with TV crews, but
that's all right. It was, you know, we'd done so much at that point. It was fine. And so so I went to IBM in their, that time it was called the consulting group and now called, I think, Business Transformation Services. For business consulting services, became a certified business consultant, business transformation consultant while I was there, and about a year into it, a little less than a year into it, Lou Gerstner said to all the groups, "You have to have an e-business consulting lead and start that practice." And so I was anointed for that, and of course, e-government is a big part of e-business. So early on, that made me a gray beard by the time President Bush came into office in this whole e-business applied to government and e-government space. They're not generally the same thing, but the two go hand in hand very often. I was there until November 2000 and moved over to Unisys and had a global role at IBM and then was a global vice president at Unisys in charge of converting their public sector offerings to e-business applied into the public sector. And in January of 2001, I got a call from the White House. Would I come interview for a job? Being a good government management reformer and having done that on the Republican side for so many years, I could say no to that. So I went and interviewed and went through several rounds of interviews. Was driving up to Bluebell, actually, to outside of Philadelphia, the headquarters of Unisys, and got a call from the White House. Would I want to be the CIO for the federal government? And I said very clearly, I don't do infrastructure. I focus on business transformation. And if the president was serious about leveraging e-business concepts to really improve the productivity and cost effectiveness and the mission of the government, I'd be interesting, but I needed that affirmation before I could talk further, and yay, verily, that's what they came back with. So we actually set up the job, Mitch Daniels, Sean O'Keefe, and I, based on the GAO report that came up, best practices for the CIO, and we called it the administrator because of the negotiations with the Hill in the e-government act. They wanted a term that would last longer. They thought CIO might be a term that would go out of vogue.
Right. Yeah. Sort of a sunset phrase. All right. So let's talk. It's a perfect segue, but we're getting close to the end of the first segment. So, all right, it's 2001. You're going to be the first CIO for the government, regardless of what the official title is. You are the government-wide CIO. That's pretty darn cool.
Well, it was for me, it was very exciting because I knew the statutory authorities that we had put into that function because of the work on the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act and the Clinger-Cohn Act. And I knew at that point 4 years' worth of e-business in the public sector, which was as much as anybody had in understanding that. So I knew the governance abilities and issues and where the authorities lie as much as any of the lawyers at OMB, which has made me fairly powerful within OMB. I knew the technologies and application of that. And what we needed was the change management paradigm. And so very quickly, we figured out that we had to do what so many businesses were doing, so large established businesses, and very quickly do an e-business strategy for the federal government.
Cool. My guest today, if you haven't figured it out, is Mark Foreman. Mark is now with Government Transaction Services, and you are a partner there. Do we
co-founder.
Have titles? Co-founder.
Co-founder is what John and I
there
call
we go. That's a good thing. Co-founder, co-director, co-guys. There you go. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. When we come back, we are going to pursue the role of the CIO in the government and migrate into some other issues.
Federal News Radio 1500 AM WFED.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio-video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit GovCom with two M's, show.org, and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week for my special guest, Rita Fagan, who is a reverse mortgage specialist with M&T Bank. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Malaria is caused by a single-celled parasite, but infection in humans is a result of transmission by mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes are important vectors of diseases to humans.
Dr. Adriana Costero is a vector biology program officer at NIH. And what is a vector?
It's basically an animal that helps transmit pathogens from one human or one animal to another.
Mosquitoes are vectors for a variety of diseases.
So malaria, dengue, yellow fever, West Nile virus, or all those are all mosquito-borne diseases.
Malaria in particular kills nearly 1 million people each year. For more information on mosquitoes, malaria, and this vector research, visit www.niaid.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
How is the U.S. Department of Defense improving its business operations? What is DoD doing to modernize its business processes and to use resources more efficiently? And how is the DoD promoting management and operational excellence? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Beth McGrath, Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense. It's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Join 36,000 people from around the world, including senior leaders from the Army, DoD, and Congress, at the 2011 AUSA Annual Meeting and Exposition. This professional development forum is October 10th through the 12th at the Washington Convention Center and features exhibits on two levels and in five halls, all centered around this year's theme, America's Army, the Strength of the Nation. Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For more information, please visit www.ausa.org.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Mark Forman. Mark has had, if you didn't hear the first segment, a variety of very cool jobs, including presidential management intern, running units for IBM and Unisys, and then in 2001, taking the role as the first official CIO of the government, which is where we're picking up right now. Mark, so you get this gig, very cool gig, very high visibility gig, and what happens?
Well, first thing that happened was I met with Mitch Daniels, who was my boss most of the time I was at OMB, and he said, "We're spending $42 billion in IT. I think that's too much. How much can we cut it?" First day on the job,
you know,
and
10%.
Fully understanding that the IT spend is a function of the program spend, the two are tightly coupled. I said, "Well, Mitch, let's take some time to analyze it. I don't think we're spending on the right things, but we may be spending too less. We may be spending the right amount. We may be spending too much. And so let's take a little bit of time and analyze that." And the next thing I said is, "I'm going to need some more people." Of course, at that time, I didn't have any staff. It was just me, and there was a group of folks that Dan Chenick ran in OIRA, the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. Bruce McConnell before him, and Bruce had been who we worked with when I was on the Hill. We did clearance.
Bruce is back over DHS right now.
DHS, yeah. Another, well, both Dan and Bruce, I think the legacy of folks in that role, if you can go back, Frank Reeder, Ken Allen.
Great guys.
Yes.
And Ken now over at IAC.
Right. So John Graham was the OIRA administrator, and he and I talked, and Dan's staff moved over with Dan under me. Dan is my career right hand. Norm Lorenz came in as my political deputy, really the first CTO in the federal government. That was his title. And so we had a very good team. And the third thing I said was, we need to do our strategy and have a well-baked strategy. The e-business strategy work that I had done at IBM and at Unisys was based on the textbook at that time called Unleashing the Killer App, something that's worthy of your readers looking at now as we turn to cloud computing. But
is it a book?
It's a textbook.
Okay.
Chunker Mui, MUI, I believe, was one of the authors. Still very relevant, but basically goes through the principles of economics. And if you understand the internet, e-business, now cloud, so much of this is about the transactions cost of doing business inside and between the government and its customers. There's another famous book at that time called Customer.com.
Yep.
And so
I have that one. I don't have the other one.
Well, buried in those is the basic strategy that most consulting companies were using. And so me having been a consultant, we took on that approach. Mitch signed out the letter authorizing what many people call the Quicksilver Task Force with the presidential guidance on what the strategy should achieve. And we made some decisions that turned out to be the best decisions that set the groundwork. We decided that we needed to make this work about 70 people. Now, you have a choice as a political appointee. Oftentimes, political appointees decide to pick other political appointees for the study team because they fear the federal government or because they feel they can trust their fellow appointees. We decided to go after government reformers, career folks, that were generally at the 15 SES level, but who had been through at least one major government transformation initiative. Whether it failed or not was not important because we knew they had the lessons learned. And that turned out to be the best decision we made as it related to the e-government agenda.
Cool. All right. So you've got this evolving group of pretty smart people around you, number one. You've got a plan in place going forward. And you're at a high level at OMB, which carries a bat. But what's the real authority that goes with that position? I mean,
right. The Clinger-Cohn Act and the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act laid out two key authorities. They all come back to who's accountable for fixing poor performing programs and who's accountable for finding poor performing programs. It first lies with the CIO and the secretary in the departments. And then if they don't do it or if they don't see things, then it moves to the OMB and the OMB director, the deputy director for management, and under the regs, the CIO or the administrator for e-government. So the way this works is no different than any company. Any division or department of a company is going to see ways to improve their management, but they're not going to see what they're doing similar to other departments. When you're at OMB and you look across, and this is exactly what we did in the EGOV strategy, you start to see redundant activities, and some departments are doing it really well, and some aren't. So, for example, e-payroll. You mentioned JFMIP when we were talking before.
Yeah.
JFMIP, we tasked to do a study. Somebody from the National Finance Center, as he was retiring, came to Sean O'Keefe, who at that time was the deputy director of OMB, and said, you know, there's a lot of savings to be had by commoditizing payroll. And so we looked, and indeed, we had at that time, so this is the 2003 budget submission, so 2001 September, we had roughly 22 agencies doing payroll, and about half of them requesting new software or software upgrades, several hundred million dollars. And so we tasked the JFMIP to do a study to look across to see, was there commonality? Could we get savings? Or did we need to have each agency doing their own payroll system? So each agency was looking at how do they improve their productivity of payroll. But only from that perch at OMB could you see that there's a better way to solve this payroll problem. And that turned out to be the same with all the EGOV initiatives. It was really a consolidation, but we took it from the vantage point of the customer. In the case of payroll, it was a government employee. When we looked at the other three groups, so we had government to citizen, government to business, and it turns out, again, if you take a look at that customers.com, they say, look at where the bulk of your transactions, and it's between government and business.
Right.
And then the third area was government to government. That's the second biggest area of transaction between federal, state, and local governments. And then the fourth is within the government, between government and its employees or across agencies. And those became the four customer segments that we chose to drive the consolidation of redundant buying. And then, obviously, you got consolidation of redundancy. What's the basis for consolidating? Well, you pick the people who have figured it out. You pick the ones that have figured out how to do it right. And under the Clinger-Cohn Act authorities, OMB is responsible for shutting down non or the poor performing redundant initiatives.
Okay. And for those of you who don't remember, JFMIP is the Joint Financial Management Improvement Program. Technically, it's no longer with us. Laws are still on the books. The thrust of the legislation is still there. It just has morphed.
Morphed into the Office of Financial Improvement and Financial Innovation and Transformation, I think it's called, OFIT. At Treasury.
Yeah. And it was under Treasury as JFMIP, too, right?
No, that's a very fascinating history. I've just heard about it. I wasn't there for the experience. But apparently, there was a huge fight between Treasury and OMB. And OMB said, the heck with it. We're putting it up as an independent organization.
Oh, that's right.
And then it got moved under GSA to service it as an independent entity.
Cool. My guest today is Mark Forman. He is the co-founder of Government Transaction Services. You are listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Where did you leave it? Where could it have possibly gone? It's frustrating because you used to have your motivation with you all the time, and now, that's okay. We'll help you find it. First, let's find your reason. You know, your reason. What's that thing that makes you want to live to an age where you can say whatever you want to whomever you want and somehow it becomes charming? Next, find your thing. What is that healthy thing you actually love doing? There's got to be one, right? Finally, go find your partner. Who's the ping to your pong? The downward to your dog? Who'll keep your butt moving and vice versa? Find all of those things. We're pretty sure your motivation will magically appear. But if you're still having trouble finding it, try looking really, really hard in the mirror. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you find your motivation to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there. Through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
This past week, researchers reported a key step toward a possible treatment for AIDS, and it was discovered by players of a computer game. Using the online game Foldit, people around the world can collaborate and compete to predict how proteins fold. Zoran Popovich at the University of Washington says it's beyond fun.
People from all walks of life can actually hold the answer to some big scientific discovery.
Popovich asked gamers to model the 3D structure of a key protein from an AIDS-like virus. It had stumped scientists for 15 years.
We're leveraging human creativity, something that obviously computers cannot do well at all.
The game might also be used to personalize learning.
We figured out a new way to create really highly skilled people on a particular domain.
Think your kid as a math whiz. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Mark Forman. Mark is the co-founder of Government Transaction Services, former CIO of the government, and the official title again of the CIO is Administrator?
For e-government and then OMB added and IT.
Yeah, and when you first came, didn't somebody call you like the e-gov czar?
Right.
Yeah.
I was looking at some old things on the internet, and I saw an article, you know, Forman anointed as ego czar or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty cool title.
Yeah.
I'd put that on the resume. all right. So we've gone through a tremendous amount of information here, and one of the things that I want to cover is in your roles in government, in industry, you've been on both sides at very high levels. There's a whole bunch of new stuff hitting the fan right now regarding government industry communications. You know, ethics guidelines, et cetera. Is there a problem?
Well, there's an absolute need for communication. And I'll tell you where I learned this really in two parts in that role at OMB. First of all, I read a book called Evolve from Roosevelt Moss Cantor, mm-hmm. who had been the editor of Harvard Business.
I have that one too.
And she's a terrific change management writer, I think. And she talked about the need to communicate with everybody who's going to be affected. Now, these 24, 25, 26 e-government initiatives and then the follow-on, the lines of business initiatives, all consolidate multiple government programs. When we did the look at the e-gov initiatives, some of them consolidated 50 different projects. So they're going to affect a lot of people. Well, it turns out you affect more people in the contractor community than you do in the government community because one of our big initiatives going back to Cleaner Cone was getting the government to buy solutions and not buy technology for technology's sake. So Roosevelt Moss Cantor talked a lot about how and who to communicate with. The folks at Input came in to talk to me as I was working through this and alerted me to the fact that most of the affected people, most of the people working on government IT are not in the government. In fact, at that time, I believe it was 82% of all the federal IT workforce were in the contractor community. So when you look at who do you have to communicate with to affect the change, you cannot ignore the contractor community. They are your employees. As the CIO of the federal government, that's your staff. Now, it's not your only staff, but they're the ones working for you. Now, the mechanism is they're not employees. They're working under contract. And as I think we all know, looking at the studies and having been in and out of government, that's grown up over the years as the government has grown, largely because IT is project-based work. And it's a lot easier to hire somebody on contract for project-based work, same thing in the private sector, than it is to hire an employee.
Right, especially if it's going to be a sunset gig. All you really need to do is get it up and running, and then it's there.
Right.
And if you need maintenance, you just hire the same people, but they don't have to be full-time, on-site, right. Reduced overhead.
So we looked a lot at what do we want on the federal workforce. I remember the folks from NAPA and the CIO Council came in to talk to me because I had to testify in a study that had been initiated under the Clinton administration was the federal IT workforce being disassembled because of the higher wages in the contractor industry and the hiring in IT industry. And we looked a lot at what do we really want out of the federal IT workforce and where do we need federal employees versus contractors' roles and responsibilities. And my belief was we needed programmer project managers that were very good. We needed people working in the governance structure. We needed architects and investment review board support and things like that. But we didn't need applications builders. As IT has increasingly become commodity and COTS language-based applications that you apply, it fits that project paradigm that you raised. And so the only way to get the change in, that we were looking for was to figure out our communication strategy with industry. And what we wanted industry to do was stop selling technologies to each agency or each department and move to selling to the government and understand the mission of the government. And we wanted to stop buying an application for one agency and having the contractors reselling that application to other agencies. You know, that's what led to things like Smart Buy. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember Smart Buy.
Sure.
Okay, we found for some basic applications, one agency was paying 100 and something a seat, and another agency was paying over $300 a seat. And when you looked at that, we were, in our eyes, wasting hundreds of millions of dollars just because of the pricing differential. Contractors were doing their job. The government wasn't. We needed to understand our inventory, and we needed to get our requirements together so that we could leverage the economies of scale and that consistent pricing. DOD had figured it out first. And at OMB, we took that government-wide with the help of DOD and using GSA and setting up that office.
Yeah, but prior to your role as CIO and even since, when an agency comes out with a requirement, it is not incumbent upon the contractor to point out, you know, if you do this, you know, you should incorporate all these other agencies, et cetera.
Right.
The contractor community is in a reactive mode.
Absolutely. And this is the difference between what do we want the contractors to do and what do we want the government to do. The government's got to be smart in figuring out its requirements and how to leverage economies of scale. As we move to more buying IT as a service and cloud computing, this is paramount. We go from saying we want a piece of software to do A, B, and C to we want to perform functions A, B, and C. Things like the federal enterprise architecture become more and more important. And my understanding is that Scott Bernard and Lisa Schlosser have really embraced that in the new strategies that they're working on under the 25-point IT plan.
My guest today is Mark Foreman. Mark is the co-founder of, let me get this right, the Government Transaction Services. And your partner is?
John Marshall.
John Marshall, another Gov grad. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
We always like to let you know about cruises, and there's a good deal for active duty military folks right now. Sado Vacations is promoting discounts of up to 20% on cruises to Europe and the Caribbean through December 31st of this year. These are Royal Caribbean cruises, and you can find out more about this particular deal on page 62 of the September Recreation News. Or, of course, at recreationnews.com.
And do you have some other cruise news?
We sure do. Recreation News is giving away a cruise to the Bahamas on Royal Caribbean. You can find the details and the contest entry on page 21 of the September issue of Recreation News. You can also enter online. There's one entry per household, though. The cruise sails from Baltimore in December, and the drawing will be held on November the 14th. All you're going to pay for this is the port taxes and your incidentals.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Do you work in procurement for a federal agency? Are you working late at night, scrambling to make all your IT purchases? Yeah, it's a pain. But if, while you're cranking away, you start feeling underappreciated, don't. Because every one of you is doing something great, making the government work smarter and faster and better. And Force 3 is right there with you. We have live operators working late every night. We're an authorized contract holder of Soup 4.
we have a huge GSA schedule. We think fast, we act fast to match your energy and your commitment because we want to see you do great things. For whatever you need this time of year, call Force 3 at 800-391-0204 because if you're working, we're working. Force 3, let's do something great. Force 3 is a Cisco Gold partner and one of the largest providers of Cisco to the federal government. Visit force3.com to find out more about our leading technologies.
Mr. Geico Gecko, with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good, which brings me to the big news. Geico offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing, or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to Geico. So no matter if you're blue or red or, in my case, green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact Geico and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today, this has been really a lot of fun. My guest today is Mark Forman. Mark is the co-founder of, get your notes together, Amtower, the Government Transaction Services. You're going to come back and we're going to talk about that too, because you're doing some absolutely cool stuff in grants funds management, and that's a whole different thing. But let's continue. Government industry communications. What's the role of the key associations in the market? We'll start with probably both our favorite, ACT IAC.
Right. This is a big question. I think everybody who's had that job had. I had it when I first took it. Karen had it when she took over after me, and I think Vivek as well had that question. How do you reach out? What is this ACT group? And I'd been familiar with them from the time that I was on the Hill, because of course they always had the annual ELC and would invite staffers down to talk about FAFSA, Clinger Cohn, and so forth.
ELC is coming up again, by the way.
Yeah, the Executive Leadership Conference. That's
and,
right.
And it's, you know, if you play at a certain level, got to be there.
You got to be there. We're in fact, I'm doing a panel this year that I'm chairing to talk about the impact of technology change and how does government take advantage of that. Should be a good session track as well, as I understand it. And it's always a very impressive conference. When I first showed up at OMB, I think it was very close to the Management of Change conference, and I think that was one of the first speeches I was told I had to go give. What we figured out with ACT-IAC, especially IAC, is that we needed to get the industry association to fit into the communication strategy and the change management strategy. Now, what had happened before was members of IAC or IAC would come to us with best practices. And as we were looking at what the companies, the member companies, were actually doing, they weren't following their best practices. So we met with the leadership of IAC and ACT. Obviously, ACT was right on board with us. And IAC followed suit very timely. The special interest groups are where you get the gurus at the working level. These are folks in the agencies that really understand the problems and are reaching out to get insights. So it's sort of like a streamlined market research. By the same token, you've got the folks in the contractor community that are the techno gurus, the folks that really are doing the work, they're keeping up to speed with the best practice. They want some visibility for that, which is really good. That's the energy that right. we tapped into to build off of. I think our biggest inroad with ACT-IAC was around the enterprise architecture SIG to begin with. And we recognized in the governance structure that we set in place and this movement to government buying solutions as opposed to technology, we really needed that enterprise architecture SIG to support all the work. And we had $1 billion being spent in enterprise architecture. And we needed the community to come together on this movement from what had been called the FEAF, the Federal Enterprise Architecture Framework, to what my team brought in, which was the J2E, the Java Enterprise Edition, second edition. And J2E was all about object-level reuse, which was perfect for us in consolidation around the citizen groupings, the four groupings. So we wanted a consolidation. Consolidation was about object reuse. We needed a J2E architecture. And we needed the folks to understand best practices for offering up the decisions or the information to the agencies on how to make the decisions and how that would all work with the CIO console. We reorganized the CIO console, created the infrastructure and integration architecture committee. And so to make this all work, we needed the industry to go from telling us the best practices to using the best practices and coming to agreement with us. The members of that SIG, just like all the other SIGs, are the ones who have a vested interest in the success of those projects and success of government. So IAC works once you figure out how to leverage those groupings and that energy that's there for the people in industry and government to work together and provide the best practices for government.
Well, ACT is the American Council on Technology, which was born as the Federation of Government Information Processing Councils. It's where the government techies got together late 70s through the 80s. It evolved into ACT late 90s, I guess. I forget when the transition was. But IAC has been around since the mid to late 80s and is the only official industry group attached to the American Council on Technology, which was born of a congressional piece of legislation. So technically, that's what they're supposed to do. The Industry Advisory Council is supposed to inform ACT on best practices.
Right.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the difference here, though, in communications that we found is we had industry groups advising us on best practices. What we wanted in the two-way street was, don't tell us the best practices, use the best practices, and let's come to agreement on the basic frameworks that everybody's going to use so that when we have the competition, it's on the quality of application of those best practices, which drove the companies to reuse knowledge that they had so the government wouldn't have to pay to retrain the workforce every time they got a new project. And so I found IAC to be tremendously useful for that. Now, the other thing was management of change. So Executive Leadership Conference every year is where the government's supposed to come out, leadership, and say, here's what we expect for you for the next year. Management of change is where you get down and dirty into implementing those changes, and that comes up every spring. And so there's a clear cycle for driving change if that person who has my old job understands how to use these two conferences and the reach out to the six.
And you've got a fourth person who just took the job that you originated.
Right. So,
and we wish him the absolute best of luck. But you, between takes here, you brought up two other groups that you wanted to highlight as industry groups that really facilitate this, the first being Tech America, run by our friend Phil Bond, and one of my favorite people in the market, Olga Gerkovic.
Right. Yeah, mine as well. I've known many folks there, Olga in particular, going back to my time on the Hill. And the issue here is Tech America is a very strong lobbying organization. I don't know if
industry. They, well, they are an industry lobbyist.
Right. If they they would appreciate me saying that, but they are. I think they're very good at what they do.
Advocate. How's
advocate.
That?
There you go. That's a better term.
Sorry, Phil.
So on the one hand, you don't want them advocating against you. So you got to reach out and communicate with them, and you do want them to advocate for you because. Mm-hmm. Part of the change in transforming government through the use of technology affects members of Congress. Data center consolidation has huge political implications when you get down to the district level. Moving to buying solutions rather than technology by technology, other big implications, because companies do come to their members of Congress. That's part of the representative process. So communicating to Tech America, I thought was very important for that job from the standpoint of them understanding, you know, they may not agree with everything, but the better understanding they had, it really fits this model of Evolve that Rosabeth Moss Kanter has. The better understanding, the better position you are to know where are the battles to be fought. Affirm is yet again a different organization.
Association for Federal Information Resource Management.
There, I found that heartbeat of the government transformation from within the government employees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so the solutions, the project-based work is an industry. They have to understand what you're doing. The HEAL communication, Tech America has to be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And leveraging the energy from change, I believe, always comes from within the body being changed. In this case, it's got to be those government employees. We learned about that in the eGov strategy work, the so-called Quicksilver Task Force, our eGov strategy task mm-hmm. force. And Affirm became the launching pin for getting the people that wanted to work in government reform that were inside the government and spreading that message and building that snowball, that momentum.
Rubber meets road. Mark, it's been great. I really appreciate you coming in here. You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center. My guest today has been Mark Forman, who has just a tremendous background throughout, obviously, various aspects of doing business with the government, both sides of the fence, including the Hill. So executive branch, Hill, industry, great combination. And currently with government transaction services, and you're coming back, we'll talk about that. This is not my day job. If you need help fine-tuning your marketing program, if you need to raise your visibility in the market, we need to talk. Find me all over LinkedIn or at federaldirect.net. And remember, you have not